This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
David Teal coming up in about 15 minutes, and we look forward to that.
Do you folks realize that in the last 5 years, only four Atlantic Coast Conference schools have a winning road record in the sport of football, in true road games,
I got to be honest with you. That number does not surprise me. And one of the reasons for it is a feature you saw last hour with Coastal Chaos.
Right.
And when you have Coastal Chaos every single year, that tells me, hey, you know what? Everybody's 4-4 or whatever. Which means, hey, we can maybe take care of business at home,
right?
But take it on the road is a problem.
Correct.
And then you have a dominant force, in the Atlantic, in Clemson, that never seems to lose a game. And when they do, it's newsworthy, and everybody kind of playing catch up. So I've got to be honest with you, Wes. It doesn't surprise me that the number isn't greater than that.
All right. Let's look at the top five, if you will, in true road games over the last 5 years. Okay. Clemson's 22-2.
It's crazy.
They lead everybody. Okay. I mean, all conferences, all comers, whatever, FBS, right? Miami's 7 back in the win column. Virginia Tech and Boston College are 8 back. BC surprises me on the list. They don't surprise you?
No, BC surprises me on that list. Okay. But I'll tell you what else surprises me. If you ask me, hey, who has the best record? That's easy. Clemson, period.
Sure.
I don't think I would have answered Miami at number 2, and I never would have answered Boston College in the top 4.
Okay.
That's how I would have responded to that.
All right. So those are the top 5. And obviously Wake Forest is below 500 at 12-13. Let's go to the bottom 5. Virginia 6-20, Georgia Tech 7 wins, Duke 7 wins, Louisville 10-18 the last 5 years, true road games, Florida State 9-16.
The one that jumps off the screen to me is Virginia, because Bronco Mendenhall has been building the foundation. We've actually seen them in the ACC football championship game recently. And even when we talked about Virginia in 21, Wes, we've talked about this.
Right.
They've got to take it on the road. And you know what? When you look at that schedule, you're going to see an early game at North Carolina. And Virginia fans that will bark and go, hey, you guys always talk about Miami and you always talk about Carolina. You give me Virginia Tech. Well, you're sleeping on us. We're not sleeping on Virginia. What we're telling you is Virginia's got to be able to take it on the road and win. It's the only way you're going to get back to Charlotte. You know who knows that? Bronco Mendenhall.
And of those 6, one was 2 years ago in Chapel Hill.
That's right.
So, that being said, Virginia, though, is not favored in any road game this year.
Well, when you're 6-20, Wes, over the last couple of years, even FPI can figure out that, you know, that could be a problem on the road.
25% is their chance to win in Chapel Hill. 19% in Miami. Obviously, it escalates at Louisville to 45, BYU 37, and Pitt 39.
And, Wes, here's the other thing. Those 5 games, North Carolina, Miami, Louisville, BYU, and Pitt, those aren't easy games.
No.
You don't get any cupcakes on that list. There's nothing easy about that list if you're Virginia.
All right. So how did this happen? Well, it happens in a couple of ways. One is there's a statistical element in here that just pops off the page. Virginia has had turnover issues in road games in the last 5 years. 46 of them, Mark.
It's a good way to get beat.
Last year, 46 turnovers on the road in 2020?
Wes, how many games do you think you broadcast in your career? Hundreds? Thousands?
Yeah, I'm closing in on 1,000.
Okay, so my point is, every time you do a game, if a team on the road turns the ball over and loses a turnover battle, you got to like their chances of taking an L, right? I don't care who you're playing. You kick that thing around on the road, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
That is a real issue.
All right. 28 takeaways on the road. How about that part?
Well, I'll go back to 6-20. That's the only. You can give me all the numbers you want. When you go 6-20 on the road, you got issues. You got to figure that out. You got to solve that equation if you want to get back to championship status.
Okay. So you know the plus minus. That's the same in every game, by the way. But it's 2-for-1 on the road. I mean, you turn it over once, it's like turning it over twice. So here's the other thing too. Now, tell me you haven't heard this. Secret to success and winning on the road, you have to be able to run the football. The run game. Virginia, 121 per game on the road, 3.6 a carry. Both numbers last.
Well, when you can run the football, you dictate how the game's going to be played, mm-hmm. right? If you have the ability to move the chains by running the football, you could say, hey, listen, you guys, that's all fine and good, but we're going to just play keep away from you.
Right.
But you just cannot give it away.
Correct. Seriously,
I mean, the game is too competitive in this day and age if you're a decent team. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you're ranked in the top 5, ranked in the top 25, whatever the case may be. If you're going to give me the ball 3 times and you only get it once, I like my chances. I'll take that and go on down the road. And if you're on the road when you don't have the crowd to, you know, use that as an advantage, yeah. now you're really in no man's land. Yeah. You got to be able to hold on to it.
I think you'll hear a lot about this, I think, coming up tonight on the road trip, the emphasis on takeaways and giveaways, but at the same time too, the ability to run the ball. If Virginia can run the ball, Brennan Armstrong will be exponentially better.
No doubt.
And he was really good last year when healthy, but if they can run the ball, Pack, I think they got a chance to be one of those underdogs that make that move like you were talking about.
I like what Bronco has built.
Absolutely.
I really do. I think he's doing it the right way, Wes. And I think he's got a quarterback who can make plays. And you have to have that in this day and age. Now, we're going to know a lot when they go to North Carolina early, because mm-hmm. that, to me, is the ultimate litmus test. Hey, if everybody thinks North Carolina is the team to beat other than FPI, whatever that graphic we showed up a while ago had Miami at 47%, I'm not knocking Miami. They could win it.
Right.
But if you're Virginia and you want to bust open this North Carolina-Miami love fest before the season starts in the Coastal,
yeah.
you're going to get that chance, but you have got to hold on to the ball. Mm-hmm. And you pointed out they won in Chapel Hill the last time they were there. You know what? That equation can still work, but they're going to have to prove it and do it consistently, because we just gave you Virginia's road schedule, mm-hmm. and it's no joke. I mean, every one of those games will be a real test for Virginia away from Charlottesville.
Yeah, they were -1 a year ago, takeaway, giveaway, total. But certainly running the ball and takeaway, giveaway going to be big numbers to follow for the Cavaliers. Again, I think they win the first one. I think they're going to win the second one. And that sets the stage for the Carolina trip.
You know, I had Dave Revson on the radio show last week, and they're doing their Big Ten tour.
Sure.
He was really bragging about Illinois. He said that Brett Bielema's got so much experience coming back.
That's...
And my antenna went up when he said that, just because I know we've talked a lot about Virginia mm-hmm. and Illinois in
Great
week
game.
Two. It's another one of those games. We give you a bunch of ACC, SEC week twos, NC State, Mississippi State, and Pitt, Tennessee, and BC, Missouri, those kind of games. Forget Clemson, Georgia. We know what that game's already about.
Yeah.
But that is another one of those kind of games that I keep talking about. Hey, you want to change the narrative of this league? Mm-hmm. Virginia, guess what? You've got to beat Illinois.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
You beat quality teams. I know we talked a lot about the alliance today with the ACC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Well, when you get a chance to play them, brother, you better beat him.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
Yeah, I think Illinois, I think he's a good coach, first of all.
I do too.
He's got Tony Peterson running the offense.
Brett Bielema is a good guy. I like him.
I do too.
And every time I've been around him, he's just terrific to work with. Yeah. And I'm glad he's back in college football, quite frankly. But there's a lot of experience back at Illinois. So Virginia will have to deal with that in week two.
All right, don't forget the road trip tonight is in Charlottesville. Starts at 7 o'clock. Hey, Kelsey Riggs! On the road tonight with E.J. Manuel.
Glad she's rocking and rolling.
Yeah, let's go, Cass. All right, see you at 7 o'clock. Bronco Mendenhall, rest of the Cavaliers. Carla Williams joins them as well.
Nice.
Virginia's athletic director. 7 o'clock, ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. Speaking of the Commonwealth, the foremost sports writer in that state, Pack, David Teal, friend of the show,
yep.
joins us next here on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, you got it.
Cliff
from
Fuller.
The basement.
Come here, Fuller.
From the basement.
Come here, Fuller.
Fuller's excited. Boy. Buddy West is back.
Buddy
finally.
West is back.
One sniff, he said, oh, my friend is back from Cartersville. Life
Big
is good.
Buddy West
Robert
is
with
back.
His peanut butter crackers.
Yeah,
got
Robert
all the boys
needs to quit
fed.
Feeding dogs, by the way.
Man, boys that. Are in a freaking coma.
Otto back there with the beer cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah, doing good. All right, ready to go?
Let's do it. David Teal time.
David Teal time, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to the Commonwealth of Virginia. There he is, Virginia Sports Hall of Famer David Teal, friend of the show. Okay, DT. How's your alliance map working right now? How you feeling about that?
All I know, guys, is it's like seeing Joe Montana and Jerry Rice on the field together again to see you two in the basement.
All right. Well, you know, last time I saw Jerry Rice, he had core issues with Brett Favre and could barely get off the chair. So that might actually be the perfect analogy. Brett Favre moving around like me. I said, come on, Brett. What's wrong with you? I saw that commercial. Took on a
Copper fit.
Took six dudes out there in the middle of the field. They're throwing around the yard. Those six guys look like me out there trying to
I gotta
to
tell you,
somebody.
I've ordered a ton of nuts.com being in Cartersville during the pandemic. I haven't ordered much copper fit.
I might need to. All right, Teal. Seriously though, on this alliance, again, it's very, very early.
Oh, it's so early?
It's a bit early.
Oh, okay.
Storybrooke Friday night. There's a lot of work to be done. But on the Absolutely. Surface, do you like the direction that these three are going in?
Absolutely. And, guys, I texted with someone this morning who gets up even earlier than I do, and their response was marquee games, voting block. Mm. And you have hit on this morning with both Andrea and Adam, and I think it's spot on that these three conferences, they have three of the 11 votes when it comes to the future of the college football playoff, with Jim Clements and Kirk Schultz from Washington State and Eric Barron from Penn State on that management board. And then they also have representatives on the Constitution Committee, including ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips, as you know, the NCAA works to restructuring its governance. And might these three conferences align there as well?
I like it. I mean, on the surface, like I said, this is like the ultimate college soap opera. Yeah, the money's always involved, but I think it's got more to do with power and positioning yourselves moving down the road here.
David, do we know who made the first move in this dance?
I do not, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was Jim Phillips, because he just... And I don't pretend to know him, guys. I've been in his company a couple of times, talked to him at length several times, but he just seems to have this collaborative nature about him. And I think it certainly makes sense for Phillips and George Kliavkoff at the Pac-12 and Kevin Warren, as Andrea aptly called them, the new kids on the block, the new kids in class, to hang out together and to see if there's something they could do. And certainly what the SEC, its move with Oklahoma and Texas spurred this on. And my questions are twofold. What becomes of all the future games that are on the schedule already between the SEC and the ACC in football? I mean, you look at, you know, Clemson's got Georgia on the table, and Alabama alone has series scheduled with Georgia Tech and Boston College and Virginia Tech, and I think I'm missing someone else in there. Miami's got Auburn and Texas A&M on the future docket. What becomes of all those games? And it would be cool to see more Pac-12 ACC regular season games. I know here in Virginia, the only time Virginia Tech's ever played a Pac-12 squad in the regular season was in 2004, the season opener against Southern California in right. Landover, Maryland.
David, I can answer that question. You play the games.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You know why? Because I've said this on radio 100 times if I said it once. I think we're heading down a road they were going to have 50 teams playing big boy football. And you know what? I think it's going to be great for the fans. And I think when you start to see schools require, hey, we're going to play a Power 5 game home and home. You saw some great series announced over the last 2 years. I really think that the movers and shakers in college athletics kind of had a feel of what this road was going to look like. Now, who knows where it's going to go? But the fact that those games were scheduled up and above, hey, we're going to play a conference schedule in addition to that, whether we're playing 8 or 9, I think kind of told you that they got a sense that, hey, we're going to be in a position where even if you lose 2 games, it may not knock you out of a playoff, whatever a playoff may look like, whether it's at 4 teams, 8, 12, or wherever that number happens to go. But I think we're starting to see a separation of who is really dialed in and committed to big boy football and who isn't. Mm.
I think it's a very good point. I just wonder if with this alliance, if it does come about, you know, is this a power play against the SEC and kind of in rebellion to what the SEC did? Will there be that spirit of cooperation between this alliance and the SEC moving forward?
David, here's the other thing, too. And I brought this up with Adam, touched on it with Andrea. This also seems to be the best landscape for the ACC to ultimately work with Notre Dame, too, because you're dealing with the house cards of their infrastructure, right? I just think that that's the way everything kind of fits out here. You're basically working through the way Notre Dame likes to operate with, quote, the traditional rivals, Stanford, USC, a Big Ten school occasionally. Navy, we know, is going to happen, right? I mean, it just seems to be the best way.
That's the way Notre Dame schedules every year. You're right. Look at the Irish schedule this year. Wisconsin and Purdue are on the docket. And you look at the future schedules, and it's littered with Big Ten home and homes, some neutral games in there as well. Of course, the annuals with Stanford and Southern California, and even some other Pac-12s in there as well. I think they have a series coming up with Cal Berkeley. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. And what does happen with the playoff? I agree with both Adam and Andrea. I think on September 28th in Chicago, I think the brakes are going to get tapped a little bit on the 12-team model, and they're going to, you know, just kind of continue discussions. And if it in any way goes to less than 12, say 8 with automatic bids, then that squeezes Notre Dame, guys. And at that point, you have to wonder if the Fighting Irish don't, you know, conclude and calculate that their best route to the playoff is through a conference championship.
Well, let's also give Notre Dame credit in a sense. They've proven that they can get to the college football playoff with only 4. By being an independent and even a member of a conference. They did that last year as an ACC team. I want to go back, though. I think you're spot on with Jim Phillips being the catalyst, David, for multiple reasons. Number one, you knew that the Big 12 in a desperate mode had to search options, and they reached out to the Pac-12. We know those discussions have taken place. If you're the Big 10, you're still printing more money than anybody. You're still in a position of strength. Their only issue is they need more teams up and above Ohio State to be relevant from a national perspective to add to the list. There's no reason for Kevin Warren to pick up any phone. He's in a good spot. They're making a ton of money. The ACC, obviously, Notre Dame's been a priority, always has been, and continues to be. So I think you're right. And Jim Phillips, again, doing a great job as the AD at Northwestern, knows the Big Ten landscape. I think you're spot on as far as the catalyst. My question to you is this. It has really nothing to do with the ACC. But don't you think if you're Bob Bowlesby, you're getting out of bed going, man, what did I do to everybody? I mean, what, did I offend somebody? I mean, I lose Oklahoma and Texas at the SEC. Now I'm reading Friday night, and I got the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 doing business. Did somebody lose my number? I mean, did I offend somebody? I mean, he's got to be feeling awful given the position that he now finds his conference.
He absolutely does. And I don't know what the answer is for the Big 12. 8 seems untenable. The remaining 8, once Oklahoma and Texas depart, whenever that may be. And then does the Pac-12 or the Big 12 look to the AAC, or does the AAC look to the Big 12?
Yeah.
Do we end up with some kind of consolidation of those two? And if so, what does that do to the playoff model? Because I think if there are only nine FBS conferences, guys, I think the number of automatic bids is going to change from where, you know, the proposed six when we have 10 FBS conferences.
So, in other words, if there are nine, the automatic goes up or goes down to diminish the at-large? Because that would be Notre Dame being an incredibly interested bystander in that operation.
No doubt, but if there are fewer conferences, I think the 12-team model becomes less appealing. That's just my way of looking at it.
I think the divide of the haves and the have-nots keeps getting larger and larger and larger. And if, again, the biggest word in sports is if, I-F, that's it. But if the ACC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 can pull this alliance off, I think you just saw where the line is drawn in the sand. The SEC's done a great job. You got the other three major leagues who go, hey, we're working in cahoots together because you know what? We are. I mean, if it turns out that you can do a scheduling model, you can add some incredibly interesting non-conference games up and above whatever your conference delivers. Television's going to love that. They're going to love the relationship of the AAU, which Wes and I talked about earlier, because those three leagues really, in particular, more so than the Big 12 and the SEC, at the very top, those presidents and chancellors love that relationship. And really, those three leagues do have a line that you can draw directly across and go, you know what? They all kind of represent each other. So if that happens, I think those guys, those four, the number between what they generate versus everybody else will have never been greater.
Well, and good luck and Godspeed to those who will try to put together the scheduling part of all this.
Come on, Teal. We'll draw it out of a hat. Let's go.
We can do it in 5 minutes.
You give Packer a challenge, he'll have an answer tomorrow, I promise you.
We'll have that done by the top of the hour. Come on. Fans will love that combination if we can pull it off.
All right. Hey, DT, I want to change gears here. I want to go to Charlottesville. Early returns on Virginia's practice. Obviously, our road trip's there tonight. We'll get a talk with Bronco and see some workout video. What have you heard about Charlottesville and the reports, at least so far? You know, they got a couple games at the front and then go to Chapel Hill in week three. It's an interesting start for the Cavaliers.
Well, it absolutely is. And I know you guys were talking about the Cavaliers' road woes earlier. And Pac's a big schedule guy. And are those four games, week three through six, New Carolina, home against Wake, a Wake team that beat them last season and returns almost everyone, at Miami, at Louisville, where UVA has never won. That four-game stretch, guys, I think to me is going to be defining for this team.
I would even throw in week two, David. I mean, that's, again, we keep talking about changing the narrative of ACC football. That's the kind of game you've got to win, especially at home against the Big Ten team. So I'm with you. Weeks three through six are critical because we're talking about conference games. But I think that Illinois game kind of sets the tone for Virginia to say, hey, guess what? Are we good enough to take care of business in weeks three through six? We'll see.
Yeah, and it's a game they should win, Pac. You know, Brett Bielema, year one there at Illinois, taking over for Lovie Smith. The program's not in a great place. That's a game that if Virginia truly has Coastal Division championship aspirations, gotta have that one. But Wes, you asked, you know, what's the word out of training camp in Charlottesville? Number one, I think it's optimistic. And number two, Jelani Woods may be the best player on the team. Oklahoma State transfer at tight end, 6'7", 260-something. They raved about him in spring, and they continue to rave about him during camp.
It is no surprise to me, David, that Bronco Mendenhall got a good transfer pack in Jelani Woods based on Tony Poljan's experience last year. based on what Tony Polchan became at Virginia, it's no surprise that Jelani Woods was interested in Charlottesville. Thank you, sir. Great to see you. Be well. We'll see you soon.
Stay in that basement, brother.
All right. You got it. Yeah, Jelani Woods, that's an interesting storyline tonight. Tony Polchan was something in the red zone last year.
I agree.
Jelani was 6'7", 260. You think you'd work with that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
Even I can get him the ball. Throw it high, Wes. Underhand. And throw it high.
Scoop it. All right. When we come back, your phone calls, 844-SAY-ACCN. Look at us all tucked in here together. This alliance has got a lot of tentacles to it as well. Yep, that road game to Berkeley, Pack.
I like Berkeley.
Yeah, I know you do. We'll get out there soon. You like the Bay Area.
I'm a Bay Area guy.
I know you are.
First place Giants.
That's it, first place. Back after this, Packer and Durham on ACCN.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, show 439. Haven't seen a scene like this since March 13th, 2020, when Wes Durham sat just right there in that very seat. Right there. Dogs are happy. Otto's happy. Robert's back with us. Everything's worked so far. Yeah. Life's good.
Chester and Fuller look like they're just overcome with emotion.
They're excited. Brother Fuller is so glad Buddy West is back.
Buddy West is back.
That's what he calls you, Buddy West.
Yeah, I know. All right. You ready?
Yeah, the alliance has been rocking. This could be, like I said, this is a modern college sports soap opera. This is about power. This is about money. This is about veto. This is about drawing the line in the sand. This is about, hey, don't you forget about us. And this has got a little bit of everything, Wes. If the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 can pull this off.
Can't wait on the book.
When this story broke Friday night, I was like I told you, that's the first thing I thought of was Greg Sankey just spitting water or coffee against the screen.
Cocktail.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, because this, I mean, the SEC kind of started the power play, right? The whole Oklahoma Texas thing. And now you're seeing, okay, point, here's the counterpoint. Bam. Has nothing to do with leagues stealing teams from leagues. It has, hey, we're going to work together if we can and figure this thing out. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays itself out.
All right, 844-SAY-ACCN. Jim in South Carolina with Packer and Durham. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Wes, glad to have you back in the basement, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Yeah, just like you guys have been saying all morning, this very interesting with how Phillips has come up and really, I think, had a big impact here on this collaboration between the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and the conference. One thing I would hate to see, and maybe it is, if it is a get back at SEC, would be losing our traditional game against the Yardbirds down in Columbia, being a Clemson guy, or Georgia Tech and Georgia, what have you, along those lines. But would moving that FCS game to a spring, has been talked about before, still allow for keeping those games and obtaining this alliance with games to take that place?
Well, I've always talked about, I think college football, quite frankly, has whiffed in maximizing spring football. I've talked about that for years and years and years. What you just presented, Jim, again, we're way, way down the road here before we can figure out if this alliance is even going to get off the ground. But that would be an option if teams and schools were open to do it. In terms of a smaller team, you play them in the spring. It gives fans a reason to tailgate. You can charge. It's another television game, perhaps. More eyeballs. Again, follow the money if you want to find an answer. I like the concept. I know it's been brought up by other coaches to have a real game other than an orange-white game or a red-white game or anything along those lines. I kind of like the idea. But again, let's see where this thing goes. And also remember last year, you know, it was the SEC that decided they did not want to play non-conference games. That was a Greg Sankey decision with their league. That's why we lost Clemson, South Carolina, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Kentucky, Louisville, and Florida State. So, again, there is so much at stake here. so many layers. And, you know, I even mentioned the Southeastern Conference. I will be fascinated to see how they go about their business once Oklahoma and Texas join the league from a scheduling standpoint.
They got to play nine, don't they?
You would assume eight's their number. The ACC has stayed at eight. Again, the two leagues that have had the most success during the college football playoff era are right. the SEC and the ACC. And everybody used to scream to me on radio in the afternoon, well, the SEC and the ACC need to play nine. Hey, maybe you guys need to play eight. I mean, I got the two guys over here that are kicking everybody's rear end in the playoff. The rest of you seem to have a problem. Maybe you guys have it screwed up. You know, maybe this Sankey-Swafford-slash-Phillips combo has figured out that eight's the right number. I don't know what it's going to be. So, but with the expansion of the SEC with Oklahoma and Texas, you would assume that they'll have to figure out a new means to come off the number eight. And how does that translate to scheduling these traditional SEC-ACC matchups at the end? I don't know the answer to that.
All right, we've spent time kind of addressing potentials here. We've also talked about television as it's evolving, right? Not just the markets, but the way the games would be digested. Andy Staples this morning in The Athletic has cut loose a list of games between 2015 to 2019 that drew more than 4 million viewers. That's the secret kind of line, if you will, to what is television success. Premium prices, right? In television, you show somebody more than 4 million people watch, and all of a sudden, networks get excited, services, whatever. Well, from 2015 to 2019, the Southeastern Conference had 55 conference games that drew 4 million or more people. That's not surprising given the landscape and all those things.
Passion and the quality of their football.
Big Ten did it 49 times in that same time window. The Pac-12 did it 5 times.
Well, I think a lot of times that has to do with two things. Number one, a lack of quality, and number two, time zone. Mm-hmm. I mean, the East Coast, hey, if you stink on the West Coast, guess what the guy on the East Coast does? Night, night.
Yep.
Catch you later. Read about it tomorrow. I mean, so that's one of the reasons I've always said with the Pac-12, they don't need to worry about expanding. They need to figure out a way for USC, Oregon, Washington, Utah, and anybody else that's interested to be good. Quite frankly, it's the same issue with the ACC. The good news is we're in the East Coast.
Well,
in
the ACC,
we got Clemson, but we really need Virginia Tech, Florida State, Miami, North Carolina, or anybody else to get hot and be relevant. That's how it works.
ACC had 13 of them.
Didn't surprise me at all.
Okay. Pac-12, 5. ACC, 13. Big Ten, 49. SEC, 55. So there you go. Clemson, by the way, had 15 games in the 4 million club. That includes non-conference games as well.
You know why? Because people want to see the best teams play. Pretty
and again, simple. It goes back to Packers gospel, for lack of a better term, Miami, Florida State, Virginia Tech.
It's not hard.
The brand names.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be good for the ACC. The only that's why I keep talking about, you want to change the narrative? Here's how it works.
Right.
Your best teams, your biggest brands have to have opportunities. The good news for the ACC is that they have scheduled large. That's the good news. You've got the potential matchups where you can change the narrative. Now the object is to walk through the door and win some of them.
Yeah. And again, we're only talking about football here. Okay.
Right.
This is not expansion. This is not a merge. This is an alliance. This is a scheduling philosophy and scheduling system that would allow these three leagues to come together. Maybe more importantly, though, given the landscape, vote congruently on certain things too.
That's why it's a great soap opera, because you've got the intrigue hook with the games, mm-hmm. and you've also got the intrigue hook with power.
Yep.
And when we start talking about voting, I know people at home are like, yeah, Pac, I don't care about the vote. Well, you will. You will when your team's sitting at home and not in the playoff and going, yep. How'd that happen? Well, you know what? There's opportunities here. So it's going to be an awesome storyline as we get within 2.5-3 weeks of kickoff.
All right. When we come back, I'll look ahead to the road trip visit tonight at Virginia and more on the docket for the show tomorrow. And also a story about the horse and polo at Virginia. You ever done the polo thing?
That would be a no. That'd be a non-next for me.
Non-next. Got it. Back after this on a Monday.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
The Cavalier leads Virginia onto the field here at Scott Stadium.
Virginia Cavaliers take the field, and it is a very spirited greeting.
My name is Kim Kirschnick. I've been the Mounted Cavalier at Virginia football games since 2000.
Bam, here comes Kim and Saber charging out onto the field and the players behind him in the smoke. It's just a really cool way to start a football game.
The crowd is excited to see Saber charge out on the field.
I'd say it's probably one of the loudest parts of the game. You know, you can see a lot of people jumping up, going crazy.
We can just feel the presence of Saber. You just got to think about the fact that, one, we have a live animal, and then the Cavalier on top riding through Scott Stadium with a sword in his hand. I love it.
The Mounted Cavaliers tradition started in the early 60s. The early riders were always students, and they were always club members at Virginia Polo.
The polo ponies themselves were used to mount the Cavalier during the football games, and it became a tradition for the students or the players themselves to take turns being the Cavalier. Polo is a very exciting sport. It's been called hockey on horseback. Tremendous amount of action. There's a lot going on all the time. You're not only watching the player hit the ball, but you're watching the horse get to the ball.
It's a contact sport where your goal's at one end, the other team's goal's the other end, and players bump into each other to get positioned to hit the ball. If you love horses and you love going fast, it's got everything you want there.
A good polo player needs to be a good horseman, and that's first and foremost. If they're not good in riding their horse, it doesn't matter what kind of an athlete they are, how well they can hit the ball. Most of the good polo ponies are very quick, very agile, but also they need to respect the rider that's on their back.
Polo horse is the most suitable for the Mounted Cavalier because they got to be able to understand and handle the commands that are given to them quickly.
The horse has to remain quiet, can't get distracted with bands and raucous behavior and loud noises and fanfare and cheering.
In polo, you're riding with the reins in your left hand because the polo's in your right hand. So since you got to carry the saber, you need a polo pony that can do that. They've had the contact. They've been in crowded arenas, heard bands, heard students, heard music, so they're the perfect candidate to see if they can mentally handle the rest of it.
Wes, I have been to one polo match in my life. When I live, don't laugh at me, when I worked for the Blockbuster Brawl, I was living down in South Florida.
Sure you were.
And my cousin, who lived down there, said, hey, I've got tickets to go to the polo match at the West Palm Beach Polo, whatever. I said, I'm in. I'm going to go check that out.
You wore pastels?
Oh, you had to dress up. That's I said, right. Okay, I'll figure something out.
And
so I went there, and I will say one thing. The cocktails were fabulous. They were awesome. Not sure I saw the horse, a mallet, whatever that guy was talking about being a right-handed, left-handed, and how you get on a horse. You know about me and horses. Yeah. I love animals. I love dogs. But the horse scares me.
The water? Like the ocean?
Yeah. The head's too big. The eyes are too big. My girls used to like to go out to Weddington and feed them with carrots and used to bother me. But polo match, I don't know. How about Kentucky Derby? That I'd like to go to. Polo match? I don't know.
More on the relationship between Virginia and polo tonight on the road trip. 7 o'clock Eastern time, Kelsey Riggs and EJ Manuel in Charlottesville. Coach Lopez, I guess, got an extra one of those sticks.
Oh, you want a mallet in here? Wait a minute.
How about a hat?
Wait a minute. Wait, time out before you start bringing stuff. For weeks, when we went on hiatus and then, of course, had my illness, for weeks, we cleaned this place up. I mean, the storage room is filled to the brim. Now you want a mallet in here? I mean,
well, a hat. Let's do the
it
hat.
It was everything we could do Let's to figure out the right
You're
place.
You're good with hats. Let's do hats.
I got a great hats in here.
We got the lacrosse helmet from Lars.
We finally got the Florida State. We got the Florida State javelin finally strategically placed above the door. Look, there's the first of Lars Tiffany's national championship. Lacrosse helmet's up there. Josh Pastner's up over your head.
Yeah.
Like the floating ghost that he is. You've got all 14 ACC football teams and their helmets
You've
behind you.
You did a heck
you.
Of a job, by the way.
I did a nice job cleaning it up. Job. I got to tell you. I really
need
did.
You need a polo hat.
I don't want a polo. How about doesn't the Cavalier? Relate
how, to about
us.
The, how about the Cavalier chapeau?
That's different.
That'd be good on you.
That's got a little Halloween potential. I got the javelin. I got cool stuff up behind. You guys haven't gone behind here.
Let me ask you a question.
Got all stuff back up here.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Say we go to Charlottesville at some point.
I love Charlottesville.
Packer and Durham on the road.
I am pro Charlottesville.
Right? What would it take to get you on the horse?
Not enough money. There's not enough money. Well, listen, we don't even have a budget for Packer and Durham hats. You're going to talk about how much money we can come up with to get me on a horse? I am not getting on a horse.
Mug?
No.
Limited coasters. Very limited.
That's the only one we
coasters.
Got left.
How about a pony? How about us?
I don't want to get on. I don't want to be near a horse.
All right.
By the way, Sabre or Renegade? You make the call.
You make the call.
Sabre or Renegade?
I'll tell you
ACC
did.
Style.
I'll tell you who did make the call. David in Mississippi here before we get to break. Close this show. David, how are you, sir?
Here.
David, how are you, sir?
Good morning, David.
David?
I gave up Welcome. Packet in the evening. I never, 10 years, I couldn't get through. Anyway, Packer and Durham sticker, excellent. Softball, the reason I called in was the other sports that are going to be involved is going to take, especially softball, to the roof. When you can schedule Arizona, UCLA, Michigan, Minnesota, all these other sports, it's good. I used to... Real quick, Bob Bowden, I got recruited by him in West Virginia in high school, went to Florida State instead. He came down there my sophomore year, ended up transferring to Marshall because me and him never got along. But anyway, that's the only quick Bowden story. But anyway, I'll let you discuss the other sports because softball's going to take off.
All right. Maybe so, but right now, no other sport involved. This is a football-centric situation, Big Ten, Pac-12, ACC, that I'm aware of.
Well, I mean, you've already got a relationship with the ACC, the Big Ten in hoops, right?
Right.
We have that in men's and women's basketball. From a basketball scheduling standpoint, that would certainly all doable. If you can, again, we're way ahead of ourselves here. I mean, this story broke Friday, and it's not like, hey, it was announced Friday night.
Right.
Now, they still got a lot of work to do, but it all starts with football.
Right.
Football is driving the show, as Jim Phillips has mentioned multiple times since taking over.
Tomorrow morning, 7:30 on this fine program, Kirk Herbstreit, Out of the Pocket.
The book is great.
Yeah. Looking forward to having Kirk with us tomorrow morning, 7:30 right here. Book hits the streets tomorrow, in fact.
Yeah, I read it this weekend, and some great, great stories. Learned a lot about Kirk and his family that I did not know. And if you love the behind-the-scenes of game day and broadcast and all that stuff, it's a tremendous read. But it's a great, great story. It's a great book. You'll like it.
Thanks to Adam Rittenberg. Thanks to Andrea Adelson. Thanks to David Teal for their time. We have plenty of Alliance talk today. Who knows where that's going? But I do know one thing. We're inside now, 3 weeks to kick, Coach. We're way inside.
We're 13 days from the start of the season.
Right.
But it doesn't involve the ACC yet. Mm-hmm. But we will be in Raleigh along with Tuffy on Thursday, September 2nd. It's great having you back in the basement. I know Fuller's glad to have his buddy back.
Yeah.
And Robert bringing his crackers with peanut butter.
Yeah,
the boys love that.
No more
Otto
of that, please.
Back there knocking out the fridge, getting everybody on the air. Good to have everybody back in studio, man.
Yeah.
Right
Drew,
here in the basement.
Josh, great day. Laura, thank you. Hank and Matt on the back row. Everybody involved on the radio side as well. Appreciate you being a part of Monday's edition of Packer and Durham. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., Kirk Herbstreit, 7:30 on ACC Network.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.